Welcome back to the podcast. It's January 2021. It's a brand new year and we're talking about reflection. So today I'm talking with Katrina Warren from the Literacy Development Centre in Waterford Institute of Technology. And Katrina has lots of useful hints and tips on getting started with reflection, how to keep a reflective journal. And I think this will be of interest to anyone, whether you're a student who has to keep reflective journals as part of your assignments, or if you're just interested in reflecting on your practice in general. So welcome, Katrina, to the podcast. Today we're going to talk about reflective practice and your experience. And I know you have a lot. You teach students how to reflect and what reflection is. And we'll get into a little bit of that with tips and that on how students can improve their own reflective practice. So just to start off, when we talk about reflective practice, what do we mean?
Hi, Karen. Delighted to be here and delighted to see the podcast going so well for you.
Thank you.
I suppose it's looking back, isn't it? But learning from what we are doing in practice, but learning how to learn properly from it. Sometimes we look back and go, oh, that went really badly, and why it went badly, but not actually looking at, well, what other perspectives are there? Did everybody, is it always that it's going to go badly if we do it the same way? So I do have, I know this is, as I said, an informal conversation, but I did look at some definitions just to try and get one to kind of encapsulate it. And Jenny Moon says, it's looking at your practice with a purpose to improve or to evaluate or to assess. Okay, and it can be very structured or very unstructured, I suppose. And that's an area our students, I suppose, struggle with sometimes. Yeah, I think as well, human nature has us reflect when we start reflecting until we, I suppose, know how to do it properly or have had lots of practice doing it. We look at the negatives a lot and we think, what went wrong? Why did it go wrong? And it's my fault. And it's very negatively focused. And the more you can look at it from other perspectives and you stop being negative, you can start to, I think, to enjoy it, because a lot of people come to reflection and go, oh no, I hate this. This is not my, it's not my bag, because everything is, I'd say, navel gazing. I thought that was a terrible lesson, or that went really badly. But did my students think that went really badly? Possibly not.
Yeah.
Or if I spoke to a colleague, what would they say about it? So it's the ways it's different ways of also reflecting on it and what others would think of the experience, not just our own thoughts on it and how it went.
Yes, I like that. And I like that highlighting that it's not all negative, that I have to look at and nitpick every little thing that I did wrong, whereas it's not.
One of the first things I kind of say to my students as well is, don't always focus on what went wrong. Focus on what went well as well and look at why it went well, or even how you could change it again to still make it better. Because even when something is good, when you're getting to the more critical reflection, it's, well, still, can I make it better?
Yeah.
Even if it's working well. The more you start doing it, you actually start doing it intuitively.
Yes.
You are doing it while you're in practice, whatever it is your practice is. You're in the middle of something, you're in a flow, and you realize, oh, this, I need to change this, because you've been thinking it's not working, or it is working, or this would be better. And that is reflection in action. So it just makes things go better and more smoothly if we're always thinking about what it is we're doing and how we can make it better.
Yeah. I know our students, we encourage them to keep learning journals. A lot of students, unless they're getting assessed on something, they don't keep journals.
Okay, and I suppose I'm even guilty of not keeping a journal myself, because I'm not a writer. Anyone who knows me probably knows I'm a talker, and you'll have to remind me to stop talking sometimes, and I'll go off on tangents. So when I actually started reflecting myself properly, now obviously when I was training, and I'm a language teacher, that's where my origins are. So when I was training to be an English language teacher, part of the training was, and you reflect always on your lesson. And it was what went wrong, what went well, what went badly, what would you do to the next time? And it stopped at that. So a very basic level of reflection. So when I started reflecting on my practice here in WIT, and I was asked to write a journal, my stomach contracted. I just went, what? No. And I could feel my head going to, my brain just went all fuzzy. And I couldn't even answer a question. If you said, what is my name? I probably wouldn't have been able to tell you, because I can't be put on the spot. For anyone reflecting, you have to find what works best for you. What's your style?
Yes.
And whether it is writing a journal. So I know some people having a set time, whether it's every day or every week or immediately after a lesson, really works for them, because they can process their thoughts really well that way.
Yeah.
Whereas for me, I found, write a journal at this time, I would sit down and I'd look at a blank page and go, I can't. I would just physically freeze and I found for me, this reflection then and this fear of it would go away if I was walking on the beach.
Okay.
And without even thinking about it, something would come to me. It was like it was just percolating away there. And because I had the distance from whatever the aspect I wanted to think about or the concept I wanted to think about, it would muddle away, percolate itself. And then all of a sudden, when I wasn't focused on it, I could reflect much better. And it just meant then that I'd go into my practice or my planning or my preparation with new ideas. Yes. And I think that's one of the benefits of reflecting. Yeah. It's the new ideas that you can create and generate.
Yeah. Because
sometimes we don't want to look back at our practice because we think it's adding too much work to us as well. If we have to constantly analyze what we've done, that's an extra part. It's an extra bit of work. And we're all time poor as it is.
Yeah.
So I also found with regard to journal writing that when I, again, it was for me, it was for an assignment and I was asked to write a journal and I found it very linear.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd write, you know, Friday, whatever happened and whatever I wanted to talk about. And I would go off on a ramble and I would let myself go off on a ramble. But I realized I needed more space around on my page.
Mm-hmm.
So I started then leaving a sentence, leaving a line blank. So I'd write on every other line and then I'd write on the right hand side page and not write on the left hand page. So it meant I could go back and yes. I could go back and write in notes. I just felt it wasn't as descriptive maybe or just narrative, but I was stepping away from it and able to go back to it.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the benefit of learning how I could write a journal better and how I could go back to these thoughts, I didn't have to, whatever I had written down wasn't set in stone. I could actually go back and change that. And it meant then I saw the benefits myself of what reflection was. The okay. fear of it went away.
That's so important. They're great tips, actually, that you highlight there, because I think sometimes I know my students feel they just don't know where to get started. They come out of a class and their head is swimming with ideas that they picked up from the module content or from their peers or wherever. And they find it very hard to structure all of this. And I tell them kind of what you were saying there. Don't worry about the structure. Just get it out of
no.
you and ramble, because that's how you clean up your thoughts.
Even coming out of a class, as you say, and you've three or four new concepts or theories and you don't know you don't understand them. But you might write down a couple of notes of things that stood out and not even writing a journal, but a couple of notes, leaving them aside and coming back to them and, you know, kind of even highlighting as you're going along or writing it in bigger writing or a different color. But these are the things that stood out to you at that particular moment. And you have time to come back and think, do they still stand out to you or not?
I usually wrap up the end of a class with some reflective group work so that I kind of go around the room and ask, you know, what's the one or two main things you learned today? How might these things apply to practice? So they go home and they're not staring at a blank page then when they go home. They've something to get started.
Exactly. And as you say, even doing the muddiest point the muddiest point is you're looking at your negative again. And I know it's not negative, it is a learning point. But what did you really learn? What made you stop and think? So even with the critical incident questionnaire, when were you most engaged? When were you least engaged? Why? And because it might be about a theory. It might be how you're getting on within the class as a learner yourself.
Yes. And here we're talking about Stephen Brookfield's critical incident questionnaire, which he shares widely online, so it's available to anyone who wants to look it up. But it's a very useful tool and can be simplified depending on the level
Absolutely.
Of the students as well. But I think you mentioned the muddiest point there, and I think that's important to get students to reflect on things that were challenging for them. And sometimes students can get stuck in their learning, and we try and normalize all of that and say there will be parts of your learning journey that will be difficult, that you will get stuck on. So reflect on those and reflect on what's happening for me. Why am I stuck here? Do I need more clarification on something? So it's kind of giving them ownership over the process, I find.
Absolutely. That goes back to what I said about when I started reflecting and the stomach just constricted or contracted or whatever you would say. And it was like, my reflections then started reflecting on why I felt like this, you know, because this was my hurdle. So it's what is happening in the class? What is your biggest hurdle? And why? And don't leave points hanging.
That's very reassuring to hear you advocating for reflective practice and telling us honestly how you really struggled with it. But that's really good, because I think sometimes when we advocate for something like reflective practice and students roll their eyes at us and they don't realize that we struggled. I'm delighted when I heard you say that writing comes naturally for you, because I struggle. It's not my preferred method of communication sometimes.
Yeah.
And I feel like admitting that, and I'm admitting it publicly now, I feel like a bad academic sometimes.
And on that point, one of my favourite, I suppose, and it's probably not a model or a framework, but is using a critical friend for reflection rather than a journal or writing something down all the time. I'll actually talk it through with somebody. That's how I solve my problems.
That's funny you mentioned that now, because I would have to admit, and I'm admitting to my students now on a podcast, that I don't keep reflective journals. Sometimes I write things down, but I do discuss things with friends. Yeah.
And I think that was the key thing for this, is to let our students know there is always a way that's going to suit your style.
And I remember a friend once telling me how they used to bring of course, everyone has them on their phones now, but she used to bring a dictaphone everywhere. So whenever an idea cropped into her mind, yeah, she felt she'd something to say, she just hit record and she could do it in the car, if she was traveling somewhere, yeah, in work, at home. And I just think there are so many different formats. It doesn't always have to be written. You can always keep your journal in any format.
Well, you do. You have your notes somewhere. You have your notes in some format, whether it's sticky notes all over the fridge, or it's a recording on your phone, or it's some pictures or drawings, or it's a journal. You still have to collate these ideas into an academically styled reflective journal or piece of writing for an assignment. Yeah.
When we talk about reflective writing or reflective practice in our classrooms, we usually give our students some kind of model that helps to structure things for them. Do you have any models that you find useful? Or
when I first thing I'll teach my or show my learners is the what, so what now model, which again comes under, there's a few different names I think for that framework. I've seen Rolf and Borton, but three simple questions: what happened, what is it you want to reflect on or discuss or analyze, so what, why is this important, you know, so a little bit of a description at the beginning to tell us what it is, why is this important, and then what now, what's going to happen next, because any reflection has to be forward looking as well. It's all about transforming our practice, I think, when you get to the to a good level of critical reflection, I suppose. It's not just a descriptive exercise. For me, I kind of look mostly, I like the Hatton and Smith levels when I'm looking at it myself. Well, have I gone into enough detail? Is it only like I'm telling a story, or am I actually standing back and having a dialogue, or am I getting really critical and looking at it from all of the different perspectives? And I think one of the perspectives that seems to be, I won't say it's always missing, but not focused on as much, is time. That you know, you come out of class or you come out of your learning, you want to get everything down quickly, you do it, I've done it now. But if you come back in a week and look at it again, you've most likely changed some of your ideas because of the time perspective. And when we're up against deadlines and we're procrastinating on assignments, leaving your journal till the night before it's due, you're not getting this time perspective in there as well.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because I see students and they do with, and look, I would probably do it myself. They leave it until the end and then they're trying to think back on what did we do in that module again, so I can write something reflective about it. And that's not really reflection. Like you said, the time is so important. You do need to step away and come back and revisit and step away. Yeah. And you know, sometimes it's after a module. I mean, I've spoken to students 6-12 months down the road and they're only getting something that they did last year now. And it's just a pity the way our education system is structured and the way our modules are structured, that it's often when they leave the module and they go away that that's when the real learning happens. But look, we, even within modules, I would encourage students, like you say, to start.
And if you start even with that simple what, so what now from each day, you've got a load of content then to go back to when you actually want to put it together. So there's so many different frameworks out there as well. And I think the other one I would go back to time and again would be Brookfield. And Brookfield's four lenses. Because generally we look at it from our own perspective, and it stops us blaming ourselves all the time if we start looking at things from different perspectives, and then bringing the theory in to support any of our, or looking for theory that I didn't realize I was doing that. And that happens a lot when learners have to link their learning to their practice. You know, because a lot of our learners are practitioners and well experienced. That they're doing things intuitively at this stage. And now they're I have a theory now to support this.
I know Maeve, who's been on the podcast before, we talked about that in naming our world. And that's what theory helps us to do. It helps us to name what we're already intuitively doing sometimes.
Exactly. There is the handbook, the LDC handbook for learners, for our students as well, that when they come in, and I do think they possibly don't look at it because they go, I don't know where to start. And within the handbook, there are models. And there are example assignments. So there are resources there, and lots of resources shared out with the learners. But some students have generously actually shared their written reflections.
Yeah. And I think it's very useful to see examples sometimes if you don't know. I'm torn sometimes between showing examples or not, because I think even though we expect in assignments people to meet set criteria, I still like it to be their style of writing. So I'm very unsure sometimes whether or not to give students samples of other reflective writing, because I'm afraid that they will try and copy that style rather than you.
Yeah, I don't like giving samples either, because I want a student to be able to do it, to be as creative as they want to be and not be constrained by somebody else's style. And it's also, that's why it's also useful to say there are different models out there and you find the model that suits you best.
Yeah.
Be pragmatic with this as well, you know, and what works for you, it will help you tick those boxes to meet criteria.
Yeah. Do you know when you come across the same things that you go, okay, this isn't quite reflection, and you say, somewhere along the line, I'm not communicating this properly. So I thought it might be helpful to show people what it isn't. And one of the things, and you went back to the Hatton and Smith model earlier, is to distinguish for me between description and reflection. So one of the common things I see when people are asked to do some written reflection is just describing everything we did in class today. So it's like, I call it the Dear Diary method.
Exactly.
We came into class and first we did introductions and then we did, and they're just describing the class from the start to the finish. And I keep emphasizing to people, that's not reflection. I already know what we did. I was there. Reflection is picking out the key things that you learned today. So it's about you. And you mentioned as well, give me action points. Where are you going to go from here? So what does this mean for your future practice, essentially?
Exactly. So as you say, it's starting at that very basic what, so what now, but not leaving your points hanging, giving specific examples. Because I've found that is one comment I put again and again, and even on very good reflections, but please give me some specific examples. And I think I love what you said there, Karen, though. I was there. I know what happened in the class. And I loved that I was there. So you don't need to tell me that this is what we did. That's fine for your initial writing, I think. And you come back and then see, well, which of those points from that day or that lesson stood out to you that you want to go back and go more into? And I mean, you do have people coming in where there's so much new learning going on if they haven't been in education for a while and they're just not overwhelmed, but amazed by it. You know, the excitement, I get excited when I have learners like that as well, because they give me the energy for the class as well. And everything is so exciting. They're like, but which point will I talk about? And they want to tell you everything. Yeah. And it's also a skill to whittle it down to picking out two or three key things that you can do a proper deep reflection on or critical reflection on. And it's the ones that keep coming up again and again. If you keep going back, it's the same point that's coming up. And if it's the same thing each time that you go, oh, that was brilliant today, that's something you need to go back to and explore why.
Yes.
Or that was what I hated most about today, or what frustrated me most today. Why did this bother you? Whatever it is, learning from it.
Because I have seen people in the past criticizing their own teaching in the journal, whereas I would prefer them to get into, well, what can I do with this? That's where the learning, that's where it becomes a positive experience, is how can I turn this around and have a successful experience next time?
As I said, I did do a little bit of reading again, just to bring things back into my mind the other day. And I just skimmed a chapter from Brookfield. And when I came across Brookfield first, I didn't like how he started his chapters, because his opening statements were very provocative, and they didn't sit with my values. I didn't realize at the time that's because what he was saying was it was challenging me. And one of these statements, which I did agree with him, it's when I fell in love with him then, was failure is nourishment. I think I could be misquoting there, but it's something like that. And I said, if we're not aware. For me, reflection is about awareness, I think, as well. That's one of the key words that comes back again and again.
Yeah.
If we're not aware that something might not have been perfect, if you can't see that you failed at something or something went wrong, we learn from these mistakes.
Yeah.
J.K. Rowling had a speech for Harvard as well, for graduation, and it was all about failure and how failure can make you successful.
Yeah.
It is about using these incidents, events where we feel we stumbled. We won't call them all failures, because it's not a failure, it's an experience, and it's an experience to learn from.
I think that's so important for students to remember that it's all opportunities to learn.
And I think it's us as tutors letting students know where we struggled as well, because we're always we have to be perfect. We can't say I start anytime I ask students to reflect, I start with a, I hear you, I know what you're going to say, I've been there, and I'm there, so I'm still there sometimes, but this is how I dealt with it. I've reflected on this so much that this is what I do now to overcome those hurdles. And I suppose, Karen, I'll just give you one of my examples that I have given to the students. That empty page, that blank page, where do we start? How do we start? But really what I do is, or have done in the past, is I've gotten a glass of wine and I've had a sip of my wine and I'm going, I have to reflect. And I've had another sip of my wine. And by the time I finished my glass, and it is only a glass, tongue in cheek there, I'll have a page of reflection. I think for me, it's the blank page, the fear of the blank page. Where do I start? So whatever it is that gets you into that comfortable, I can write now, whether it's putting on music or even sometimes it's sitting down in front of the TV with the laptop on your knee going, don't want to do this. I'll watch Coronation Street while I'm doing it, or whatever it is you want to watch. But the glass of wine for me was the one that it did work for me. But when I went back a week later and saw it wasn't a blank page anymore, I was like, oh, I don't have to start from scratch, but I'll read it now and see what I did say. And did I have any insights in there? And you know what? There wasn't a lot. There were a few things that it did make sense. It was English. I could read it, but I wasn't starting from scratch. And that was the key. And I had a few points that I actually just, I went on to develop from that rambling piece. And I think we need to not be afraid to ramble to get to something good.
Yeah.
So never have that glass of wine the night before you're submitting, you know, do that proofreading properly. But if you need it to get started, off you go. You have my permission. And only a glass.
Keep within the recommended guidelines.
Exactly. Public health warning here.
Thank you very much, Katrina, for joining me. And I think your tips are going to be really useful for anybody who's doing a journal, whether it be for an assessment or just something they want to keep as part of their practice. I think that was really, really helpful.
Thank you very much.